Hey everybody, it's Britt, lead pastor at Sunridge. Welcome back to our teaching podcast. You know, we are on a mission here at Sunridge to help people find and follow Jesus. We believe in the good news that Jesus welcomes all, regardless of how far you feel from God. That means we're a great starting point to explore Christianity or to sink your spiritual roots deep as a devoted Jesus follower. If you'd like to know more about us, just check out our website at sunridgechurch.org. And of course, we'd love to have you drop in anytime for a visit to learn and worship along with us. And now, here's our teaching for this week.
Hey, good morning, Sunridge. It's great to see you guys on this 1st of December. You can have a seat. If you're new to Sunridge, my name is Britt. I serve here as the lead pastor, and I just want to like double down on what Jed said about our welcome brunch right after church. I'd love to meet you. It's super casual, and we'll just tell you a little bit about Sunridge and try to get to know you a little better. So maybe last 45 minutes, so you'll still have time to go out and get me a Christmas present or whatever you need to do. You know, every December, it's during the giving season, our church tries to focus on something, you know, ways that we can be extra generous. And this year, we're asking you to love your church, to love his church, and to love the vulnerable. And when I say love his church, I mean many of you are extra generous during December, and I want to encourage you to do that. You have no idea what a difference it makes in our annual budget, which goes from October to September, what our December giving does. It carries us through you know, some of the harder months when people are gone or people are struggling, whatever it may be. So I want you to start praying about that. And then when I talk about loving the vulnerable, I'm talking about changing a kid's life. Part of our vision here at Sunridge is to bring hope. You guys know that. And this year, we've partnered with Compassion International. I've talked about their ministry before, but Compassion releases children from physical and spiritual poverty. And currently, they're sponsoring 2.3 million kids across the world in 29 different countries. And many of you know that this past June, I went to Guatemala with a group of pastors to see the work that Compassion is doing. And this precious little girl that I'm gonna put up on the screen is one of 300 that were sponsored in a church up in a mountain community not far from Guatemala City. And I can just describe her living conditions. You can see here, she and her mom and her little brother, they live on a dirt floor. They don't have running water. And their house, it's like a block house with, you know, a metal roof. But they're one of the fortunate ones because they have an actual well on their property. And so that's where they get their water in buckets. They had the buckets of water around. And when Compassion came into this family, like others, you know, we got to visit these homes. They bring medical care, education, tutoring, life skills, and of course they make this really strong connection because they deliver their ministry through the local church. And, you know, along the way, as I've prayed and talked with other people and talked with Compassion, we've decided that we want to focus our efforts, not just around the world, but in one area, and that's Nicaragua. And so on December 15th, which is 2 weeks away, Compassion is going to be here with us. And I want you to start thinking about what God might be calling you to do. I picked Nicaragua because it's accessible for us. And what you may not know about Compassion, one of the things that I love about them is that we can actually go and visit our kids. And so we can do a church trip where those of us who want to go can go and see the kids that we sponsor. And on the trip I was a part of, I got to see a family do that. And it was so powerful, you guys. I'm not going to cry. It was just so moving to me to see that. And I really long for that. I mean, I've sponsored kids through ministries before. And, you know, it's, you know, they're out there. I'm making a difference, but you don't have that connection. This is one of the things that I really love about Compassion. I'll be telling you more about that, but here's a clue. Do not go early onto their website and start sponsoring kids. We need you to wait to the 15th, because what Compassion is doing is they're holding aside 125 kids for us in this local region. So if when we do sponsor these kids, they won't be spread out all over the place. That enables us as a church to go and see them in a location. So just start praying about it right now. You know, over the past 3 months, we've been studying the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. And it was all about these tangible and practical ways that God demonstrated that he had his hands on the people that returned to Jerusalem. And, you know, we're not rebuilding a temple here or, building a wall around the city. But as your pastor, what I want to ask you to do during this Christmas giving season is to pray and consider how God's hand could be on you. And we can make a difference in this. That during a time when we shower our generosity on our loved ones, on our family, on our coworkers, sometimes people we don't even like, that we take a moment and we consider how we can be generous to God's church and we can love the most vulnerable. So there's more to that to come. Speaking of Christmas, you guys know that Christmas is here. Let's take a little informal survey before we get started in the Bible today, okay? Here's some questions. I'm going to put them up on there. How many of you are really looking forward to spending time with family on Christmas Day? Okay, how many of you think Christmas Day with your family would make a good Jerry Springer episode? Well, there's one hand. Okay, another one. How many of you think the Christmas season shouldn't start until today, December 1st? How many of you think it should start right after Halloween? You all work for Home Depot, I see. Anyone think it should start right after Labor Day? How many of you, it's Christmas 24/7, 365? Yep. How many of you that raise your hand, do you still have your Christmas lights up? Because your association doesn't like that, your homeowners association. Okay, how many of you are already done with Christmas shopping? You're already done. A few, okay, that's awesome. How many of you plan to start on Christmas Eve? All right. How many of you shopped online on Black Friday? Awesome. Of those who did, how many of you ended up buying a lot of stuff for yourself too? Okay. Last question. How many of you have ever re-gifted a Christmas present? Oh, okay. Okay, be honest. How many of you have re-gifted a Christmas present in the same Christmas season? Okay, thank you for your honesty. I'll pray for you. That was fun. Okay, so this Christmas season, what we're going to do is we're going to be talking about the greatest gift ever given to mankind, Jesus. But he was more than just a mere baby in a manger. 700 years before Jesus was born, the prophet Isaiah predicted his coming, and he described him in four ways. In Isaiah 9:6, the prophet said, "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." You know, if you're not familiar with the Bible, this is one of the most famous prophecies about the coming Messiah in the Bible. And it was common in that day for kings to be named with a series of titles. And here we have four names that are ascribed to the coming Messiah: Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace. And what we're going to be doing in the month of December is we're going to be taking an in-depth look at each one of these, one each Sunday. And this morning we're going to talk about Wonderful Counselor. But first, I want to give you a little context about Isaiah and this section of Isaiah. Number one, this is in your notes. Isaiah's prophetic ministry spanned the rule of four kings. Remember, the prophets were speaking to a generation and a time. And Isaiah, his ministry spanned the generations of four different kings: Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. And in Isaiah 6, you have this dramatic picture of how God calls Isaiah to speak for him, to Isaiah. Secondly, Isaiah has been called the gospel of the Old Testament, the gospel of the Old Testament, because more than any other writings in the Old Testament, Isaiah clearly points to Jesus, the Messiah, in his coming reign. Thirdly, Isaiah prophesied during the fall of the northern kingdom of Israel. So there's a context here. When the northern kingdom of Israel fell. Now remember that when we studied Ezra and Nehemiah, that was all occurring after the southern kingdom of Judah had fallen. Israel, the northern kingdom, had already fallen. But if you can imagine Isaiah being a prophet in this day when the people are far from God and there's this impending invasion that's coming, these are dark days for Israel. Last, Isaiah's prophecy could have a dual meaning, both immediate and future. So here, you're going to have to put your big boy theology pants on to follow me. See, one of these kings that Isaiah was prophesying during his reign was named Ahaz, and he was not a good king. And of course, though, as the king, he's concerned about this invasion that's imminent. And God comes to him and he says, you know, he gives him this assurance that if he will follow him, he will save the people and he'll provide a sign to prove that he's serious about it. And Ahaz, because of who he is, he's not interested in a sign. But God says, you know, I'm going to give you your sign anyway. Here's your sign. A coming son will be born. And that's what Isaiah prophesied in Isaiah 7:14. Now, some believe that this would have been Hezekiah, Ahaz's son. Isaiah says this child that would be born, we've already looked at this today, would be born into the nation of Israel. He says, unto us, a child is going to be born. And he will rule over God's people. The government will be on his shoulders, which is a figurative phrase, referring to the kingly robe that would be placed on him. But it's clear from Isaiah 9:6 that this can't just be some normal human child. He's called Mighty God, an Everlasting Father. Those aren't appropriate titles for a human child. So there was a temporary fulfillment of this prophecy during Isaiah's day, but it's ultimately fulfilled in Jesus. And you know, a lot of biblical prophecy is like this, by the way. There's an immediate and partial fulfillment, and then Jesus comes along in the New Testament, and he starts referring to himself in the context of these passages. And they go, oh, I get it now. So Jesus was the son born of a virgin who would be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace. In Jesus, God provided a solution to mankind that got at the root of the human condition or our human problem, our sinfulness. And Isaiah shows us how he does that by ascribing these four names or four titles to the Messiah that describe his character. And today we're going to look at the first of those, Wonderful Counselor. In the Hebrew, Pele Yaletz. Two words in English, two words in Hebrew. You want to say that with me? Let's speak a little Hebrew here. Pele Yaletz. Pele Yaletz. See, you guys are your Hebrew scholars already. So Pele, the first word, means beyond understanding. Too wonderful for words. It could even be like supernaturally wonderful. It's the word that you would use for the most awesomest of awesome. That would be my generation. But let me put it so our young people here can understand today. Jesus isn't basic. He's bussin'. He's eight. He's fire. I'm not capping either. Period. You see, they were stan for Jesus. Right now, my grandkids are kind of cringe about me saying that. They might think I'm DeLulu, even though I got Riz. Maybe I should have just stuck with awesomest of awesome. I don't know. So that's Pele. Then Yaletz is one who advises, instructs, or guides. And Isaiah says, this child who will be born will be the most understanding, the most wise, the most too wonderful for words, advisor, and guide. He is the goat of all counselors and problem solvers. Okay, I'll stop. Jesus isn't a counselor then, like when you call up your friend late at night after a breakup and they're like, oh man, that really stinks. That's the advice that they give you. He's the one that you can bring your biggest problems to, the biggest messes, the worst situations, and he can show you the way forward. During Jesus' ministry, literally thousands of people, think about this as you think through the Gospels, thousands of people brought their biggest problems to him. And then he asked them questions. He made statements to them like, what does it mean to be a good neighbor? People came to him and said, my son is sick and no one can help him. How can I have eternal life? And Jesus could answer those questions. And he could be the solution because he's the Pele Yowitz, the wonderful counselor, the WC. Okay, now I'll really stop. How can Jesus be that kind of guide? Because of another name he's called. Matthew quotes Isaiah 7:14 when he says of Jesus' birth in Matthew 1:23, the virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. Emmanuel means God with us. Now, this isn't just a wonderfully comforting thing to say about God's proximity to us. This is a statement. This statement about Jesus is the basis of one of the most important Christian doctrines, the incarnation. The incarnation is when God took on human form in the body of Christ. So that's a central doctrine to the Christian faith. Jesus was fully God and fully man, and Paul explained it this way in Philippians 2:6, who, Jesus, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing. By taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. Which is all to say that Jesus is not just a wonderful counselor because he's all wise and knowing, but he's also been there and done that. I'm not saying it's always right, but don't you have a hard time listening to advice from someone who's never been through what you've been through, what you're going through, never been in your position, never done what you do? If the doctor tells you you have cancer, don't you want to talk to someone who's had cancer? If you're going through a divorce, don't you want to talk to someone who knows how betrayed and lonely you feel? If you're exhausted from chasing little ones around all day, don't you want to talk to somebody who's lived that life and made it through it? If you're battling an addiction, doesn't it help to talk to someone who knows how bad you want to use again? Here are some of the implications of the incarnation. First, Jesus can identify with our grief, pain, and woundedness. He can identify with us. There's nothing that you and I could ever face that Jesus didn't also face. Isaiah, again, 53:4, says, surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering. If you need big answers to big things in your life, James says that Jesus is the kind of counselor who can help you make the best decision you could possibly make. In James 1:5, if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. In other words, he'll give you the wisdom you need. And I love this part, without finding fault. The wonderful counselor is not going to look at you and say, really? You don't know what to do? Or now you want my help? He's not some detached from reality king living in his ivory castle out there who hears that people have no bread and says, let them eat cake. He identifies with our everyday stuff. The writer of Hebrews says it this way in 4:15, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. So Jesus is not some aloof, high priestly being that can't relate. Jesus didn't just talk the talk. He walked the walk. The biblical Christmas story tells us that Jesus was born in a poverty, a barn, into an oppressed people, the Jews. And the historians say that Joseph and Mary were very likely some of the poorest of the poor. Jesus grew up in a working class family that struggled to make ends meet. And so from childhood to adulthood, Jesus faced poverty, racism, and lack of opportunity. And the Bible says he empathizes with us, with our weaknesses, with our temptations. That's just part of what the incarnation means to you and me. Therefore, when we come to Jesus, the wonderful counselor, we can be confident that we'll receive the guidance and the counsel that we need. And that's the next verse in Hebrews 4, verse 16. Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. See, we can come to God with confidence. And when we do, you'll find mercy and grace to help you. You can come when you're confused and you don't know what to do. You can come with a mess that you've made, and you can come on someone else's behalf and you don't know how to help them, because he's the wonderful counselor. Now, those are some great thoughts here, great theology, but how do I gain access as a human being to the wonderful counselor? And that's what I want to talk about as we start to close here. Well, gaining access to the wonderful counselor is pretty much like getting counsel from any counselor. The counselor will tell you, number one, we must be honest with ourselves. We have to be honest with ourselves, because we all have a tendency to conceal who we really are. We have guilt. We have shame. And those qualities about us cause us to hide our fears, our anxieties, and we have trust issues. And it even makes us hard, it makes it hard for us to face ourselves in the mirror. We can't even tell ourselves the truth. And even when we see our shortcomings, we tend to blame others. You ever watch one of those auditions of shows like American Idol, where the person can't sing at all, but they think they can? Remember Pants on the Ground, William Hung? And, you know, what invariably happens is they get turned down in that audition, and they walk out without the golden ticket from their interview, and then, you know, they're talking to them, and it's like, well, you know, like, I know I'm a singer. And you're like, oh, no, you're not. And they say things like, this will not stop me from pursuing my dream. Do they ever listen to themselves sing? That's what I'm talking about here. Like, how many people do we know that can't admit that they're addicted to their job and they ignore their family? How many people do we know that get a second DUI and still don't think they have a drinking problem? How many people keep saying they don't need to see the doctor, but all their symptoms tell them that they need to see the doctor? How many people have just like this wake of broken relationships behind them, but it's not their fault? How many people, their marriage has fallen apart, and they're like on their third counselor who tells them, no, it's not your spouse, it's you. And you need to deal with this issue. And they're like, no, it's not. Not even the wonderful counselor can help you if you won't admit the truth to yourself. Mark tells us once that a rich man came to Jesus with a question. He said, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus said, keep the commandments. And he said, I do. No brainer. And in Mark 10:21, Jesus looked at him and he loved him, but he told him, one thing you lack. He said, go and sell everything you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come and follow me. And you know, the man's response is revealing. Verse 22, at this the man's face fell, and he went away sad because he had great wealth. His face fell, which says that the truth that he got, that was said to him, he really didn't want to hear it. That can't be the answer, he was thinking. That was not what I was expecting to hear from Jesus. And then he just went away. Sad. Like, disappointed. He came with a question. He got the answer, and his face fell. That can't be it. And Jesus let him walk away. You know why? Because even the wonderful counselor can't help you if you can't face the truth about yourself. If it's hard for you to admit, it can be hard for us to admit to God that we need help. I want to tell you that there's nothing that about you or me that God doesn't know already. So that's wasted effort, by the way. In Psalm 139:1, David said, "You have searched me, O Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You're familiar with all my ways, and before a word is on my tongue, Lord, you know it completely." God knows us. We can hide in the garden, but God already knows where we're hiding. He already knew that we were naked long before we discovered it, but he still loves each one of us the same. Now, maybe you know people that you cannot bear your soul to, and that's wise, but that's not who God is. Paul wrote that Christ died for us while we were still sinners. And Jesus said he didn't come to condemn, but to love. If you want help, though, from the wonderful counselor, you have to start by being honest with yourself. Secondly, if we want help from the wonderful counselor, we must want to get better. We must want to get better. Sometimes we can admit we have a problem, but we really don't want to change. Augustine wrote one of his prayers and confessions. Here it is. "God, make me pure, but not yet." Can you relate to that? Sometimes, you know, we're not okay with the way things are. We can see it. We can even admit it. But we really don't want to do the work. We don't want to make some of the hard choices that come with changing. People say, "No, I don't want to get a divorce and only see my kids on weekends if I'm lucky. But no, I'm not really ready to break off my adulterous relationship." People say, "No, I don't like being addicted to weed, but I'm not willing to go through a program to get out of it." You can say, "I see the effect of me working too much on my wife and my kids, but you know, I'm not going to stop because I'm really focused on my career." Some people say, "Yeah, I can see that I'm going to flunk out this semester, but I'm not going to stop skipping class because I like to stay up late and play video games." Proverbs 12:15 says, "The way of fools seems right to them, but the wise listen to advice." And isn't the truth that, like, sometimes we're just stubborn? We're just stubborn. You know, if you want, you can keep going to counseling and paying your $100 an hour or whatever it's running these days. But if you don't really want to change, nothing's going to change. Your doctor can tell you to make some changes to your diet to get your cholesterol down, but if you keep showing up to your doctor's appointment with Burger King coupons in your pocket, is it likely you're going to change? Now, you guys might think, I'm about to tell you something. You might think when you hear this, I'm some kind of cold-hearted pastor. That might be true. But if I counsel someone, and I show them what the Bible has to say about it, and then I give them maybe a follow-up assignment, a little homework, memorize a verse, you know, use this coping strategy, just do this one thing for the next week. And then we meet a week or two after, and I ask, you know, "How'd it go with your homework? How'd it go with your little assignment that I gave you?" And they say, "Well, I didn't do it." They say, I didn't memorize the verse. I was really too busy to do that. Or, "I couldn't say thank you to my wife for making my dinner each night. It's just too hard right now for me to say those words to her." Or, you know, I just kept watching the games instead of helping the kids get to bed this week. Eventually, I just look at them and say, "I'm not meeting with you anymore." And they say, why? They get their feelings hurt. Sometimes they get mad at me. And I say, like, we're just wasting each other's time. I'm meeting with you, listening to you, and trying to help you, but you really don't want to change. And that's evidenced by your actions. See, people may want the benefits of change, but they don't always want to do the hard work of change. Jesus told the Pharisees in Matthew 21:32, John came to you to show you, John the Baptist came to you to show you the way of righteousness, and you did not believe him, but the tax collectors and the prostitutes did. And even after you saw this, you did not repent and believe him. So even though they saw the people around them changing, what do we know about the Pharisees? We know that the Pharisees were like just hard-hearted. They were okay with the way they were, and they were threatened by what Jesus said. Even though he came from their own people, they rejected him because they really didn't want to change their situation. They were threatened by that. They had the same truth as everybody else, but they didn't want to make the changes. If we want the wonderful counselor to work in our lives, we have to be honest with ourselves, and we have to want to get better. And then last, we must do what he says. Like any good counselor, must do what he says. At the conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount, this manifesto of Jesus, the essence of all of his teachings, he told a story of two home builders. It's in Matthew 7, starting in verse 24. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on a rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. And the rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. And that, you know, there's a lot of ways to look at this kind of wrap-up to Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. But I think that the key thing that Jesus said here was put his words into practice. That's where the benefit is. Not just to be able to recite his words by memory, not just to wear a t-shirt with it on there or to have a sticker on your car window, not just to talk about it with others, but to put it into practice. And when we're getting counsel, doesn't it really come down to, like, I have to have a trust relationship with that counselor? Because the things they're going to tell me are going to help me. But some of them might seem so foreign to me. It might be kind of like against my nature, or it might be something that I just never thought of doing before. Sometimes it will seem even like it's unfair what they're telling me to do. But when we come to Jesus, we don't come on the basis, okay, Jesus, give me some suggestions here. You know, give me these suggestions, and then I'll test them out, and I'll keep the ones that I think are working. In Matthew 6:33, Jesus said, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Which is to say, put my ways first. Just follow my lead, and these things will fall into place. These things that you're struggling with, the things that you're seeking solutions to, the questions that you're seeking answers to, it's going to fall into place if you seek me first. Because he's the wonderful counselor. When you go in for an appointment with him, you're going to have to be honest with yourself. That's why you're coming to him. It's like, I need help. I don't have the answer. I don't have the solution. And you're going to have to recognize that you're a sinner like every other human being in the world. And so it's likely you're contributing to your problem. Somehow, some way, you're part of the problem. And what you're doing when you come to Jesus is you're committing to do what he says, without completely knowing in advance what he'll say, because you're putting your trust in the wonderful counselor. When we go to him, we're no longer in control of the options. This isn't just God saying, you do what I say because I'm God, so shut up. That's not the point. It's like I trust him. I'm placing my trust in him, and I don't know the path. So I put my trust in him because he's the wonderful counselor. I don't know what the next turn is. This feels weird to me to do what Jesus said. It's so foreign to me. But you're saying, Jesus, I trust you, and I'm going to take that step. My probationary year as a fireman. Have I ever told you guys I used to be a firefighter? Well, I did. And I remember vividly my first structure fire. It was with my captain that we baptized here before, Don Easton. If you're listening, Don, shout out to you. And what had happened is we had gone to our headquarters to get fuel. And there was another engine getting fuel at the same time. And we started to leave, and we saw a header. A header's like the smoke going up. So we saw the fire before we ever got dispatched to it and started heading toward it. So we got there really fast. They were giving us the call, and we're like, we're on scene. I'm sure our dispatcher's going, wow, those guys are fast. And so we went right in with the other crew with a hose line. It was just a house fire, but you know the main fire's in the back bedroom. It was burning all down the hallway and then out into the living room as we came into the front door. Super hot. Very, you know, like it was the fire was super active, and I was dragging the hose for another fireman on the front, and my captain was behind me, and so he started hitting the fire, and like he turned around and said, it's too hot, and we had gotten there so early we didn't ventilate. Do you know, like, have you ever seen firemen on roofs where they cut the hole in the roof? And you're like, why are they destroying the house? Like, that's to let the heat and smoke out of the house. And so you can actually see, and it releases so much heat, you're much safer in an interior fire. But we were there so early, the truck company wasn't there to do that. So we're just taking all the heat. Well, like, he's like, it's too hot. And he lets go of the nozzle and leaves. Yeah. And I'm like, okay. But I didn't know what to do. It's like, man, it's too hot. And my captain goes, get on it. And I just got on it, and we put the fire out. We were the heroes. Yeah. It wasn't me, though. What I'm saying is, like, he just left, you know? Like, I'm going up there. That was a moment where, like, I trust this man. He has more experience than me. I have no experience. This is my first legit structure fire. And I just did what he did, and we ended up the hero. And I have to say that... you know, the firefighter that bailed out, he kind of wore that the rest of his career. He'll remain unnamed. See, it's crucial to grasp this idea because the way of Jesus, the wonderful counselor, can be so different to what we're accustomed to. And when we're living the life, we'll see a lot of people retreat from doing his calling. And we'll think, well, maybe I shouldn't do it the way Jesus said. Like, they're not. And so they're walking away from the things that, like, seem so unusual and so, like, upsetting to us. Things like the greatest among us will serve others. If you want to have an abundance, be generous. The way of righteousness is to admit that you're a sinner. What good is it if you gain the whole world and lose your soul? See, when we come to Jesus for wisdom, the wonderful counselor, the only way it works is if I trust him completely. He doesn't force his will upon us. But be assured, he's not providing suggestions for us to consider. And if we're not willing to do what he says, we'll never get the hope or the help that we're after. I'm going to ask the band to come up. And as they come up, I'm going to say, I have good news for all of us. The birth of Jesus was good news to all people, right? When Isaiah calls Jesus the wonderful counselor, he's saying that Jesus came for people with problems, right? That's you and me. And if you think about it, every one of his miracles started with a problem. In fact, anyone that came to Jesus in the Bible had a problem, I think. And I don't know about you guys, it's like I have my own problems. But when we need to come to the wonderful counselor to get help, there's a variety of things it could be. Maybe I need help in my marriage. Maybe it's one of your children. Maybe you're struggling in your business. You're having ethical issues in your business. You're trying to figure out the next step there. You're wondering how you're going to get through the medical treatment that you're facing right now and some of the medical issues that you're having. Maybe you're like, man, I've made all these choices in my life and I do not know how to recover from this path that I've been on. And maybe some of you have no idea what your problems are specifically, but you know what you're doing, it isn't working. Jesus said that he came for the broken, not the righteous. He said the healthy don't need a doctor, only the sick. And he said that he would leave the 99 that are doing just fine to rescue one sheep. This Christmas season, what I hope for us that all of us with problems are reminded that this Christ child that we're celebrating is called the Wonderful Counselor. The only question is, are we going to listen? Let's stand and worship together.
Hey everybody, it's Britt again. Thanks for listening. If you need something, if you have a question, or you'd just like us to pray for you, you can reach us through email, info@sunridgechurch.org. We hope you'll listen in again next week, but in the meantime, keep helping people find and follow Jesus.